Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a beautiful day in Philadelphia and a great day to be alive, especially if you're a member of the Philadelphia Society. This is our first panel, dissecting anti-Americanism, the contribution of Paul Hollander. We have two wonderful panelists to help us with that topic. And although Paul Hollander cannot be with us because he's over in Europe giving lectures, Bill Campbell will be reading his response to our comments. So the question, it seems to me, is why are they so anti-American? Well, since its founding in 1776, America has been the country that other countries love to hate for what they see as our cultural barbarism, gross materialism, overriding chauvinism, moralistic politics, and imperialistic designs. Now, although many Europeans in the late 18th century and 19th century regarded America as a new world, and as one put it, a return to the innocence and perfection of the Garden of Eden, as many Europeans disparaged America for its cultural inferiority and lack of intellectual curiosity. The French diplomat Talleyrand, for example, described America as a nation of 32 religions and just one dish. Presumably not Coq au Vin. Alexis de Tocqueville, while an ardent admirer of American democracy, wrote, "I do not know any country where, in general, less independence of mind and genuine freedom of discussion reign than in America." And by the end of the 19th century, according to the historian Simon Schama, most Europeans regarded Americans as overconfident and self-important, captives of their own egocentricity. Now, after World War II, Western criticism of America grew more political and openly leftist as we became a global power, an avowed opponent of the Soviet Union and communism. Western intellectuals, from Jean-Paul Sartre to Noam Chomsky, aligned themselves with communists because of America's supposed campaign to achieve military and economic global domination. When General Matthew Ridgway visited Paris in 1952, French leftists called Ridgway the bacterial general, because they claimed America was engaged in germ warfare in Korea. American communists vied with each other in their denunciations of Americans' decision to fight the Cold War. The Communist Party chairman, William Z. Foster, described American imperialism as a monstrous, all-consuming spider and insisted that, quote, Goebbels was a novice compared with the war propagandists of the United States. According to our panelist, John Earl Hines, the leftist author Howard Fast called the United States a police state, a land of loyalty oaths, witch hunts, and terror for all who might hate war and love peace and democracy. In 1953, Herbert Abthacker, a leading communist theorist, described the American ruling class as having the morals of goats, the learning of gorillas, and the ethics of what they are, racist, war-inciting, enemies of humanity, rotten to the core, parasitic, merciless. And liberals have the gall to call us extremists. In his seminal work, Anti-Americanism, Paul Hollander shows that many pro-Sandinista supporters in the 1980s were driven by reflexive anti-Americanism and fantasies about the success of the socialist experiment in Nicaragua. In another of his definitive studies, Political Pilgrims, a marvelous book, Hollander argues that intense alienation is the single major factor that produced the pilgrimages of Western intellectuals into the welcoming arms of the communists. Quote, intense rejection of one society leads to or entails such anger, despair, and hostility that it becomes imperative to find alternatives to the social system the critic lives with. Well, following the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Cold War, Francis Fukuyama and other neocon intellectuals declared that liberal democracy and capitalism had triumphed, and that we were at the end of history, and presumably anti-Americanism. But instead, the anti-Americans shifted their attacks and began blaming America for globalization and the emergence of a new world order dominated by the White House, the Pentagon, and the New York Stock Exchange. The events of September 11th, 2001, marked a new phase of anti-Americanism and a new phrase, anti-American terrorism. While President George W. Bush and the British Prime Minister Tony Blair said that the Islamic terrorists responsible for the attacks hated America for its freedoms and its liberties, left-wing critics cited third world poverty, globalization, and, of course, U.S. century 20th foreign policy as the causes of the attacks. Proofs of American imperialism were everywhere, they claimed, such as our support of the Contras in Nicaragua, the continued boycott of Cuba, our unstinting support of Israel, the true aggressor, they say, in the Middle East, the presence of U.S. troops in South Korea, Japan, Germany, and many other countries. In fact, many in the Middle East believe that Islamic terrorists had nothing to do with 9/11, claiming the attacks were an American, an Israeli, or a joint American-Israeli conspiracy. A Pew Research poll of Muslims in eight countries in 2011 revealed that less than 30% thought that groups of Arabs carried out the 9/11 attacks. In the wake of the Iraqi and Afghan wars, the intellectual elite, and often the man in the street of many nations, Western and non-Western, let loose a flood of anti-American rhetoric, as well as acts of violence and contempt. American flags and Bush effigies were burned. American embassies were picketed. The windows of American businesses like McDonald's were smashed. And the Nobel laureate Paul Krugman was moved to write, "The memory of 9/11 has been irrevocably poisoned." Nowhere, or almost nowhere, did the anti-Americans mention that America liberated Europe from totalitarianism in two world wars, saved Britain and Western Europe from economic collapse with the Marshall Plan, defeated communism, and preserved Western liberalism in the Cold War. They did not concede that America has successfully intervened in disputes between India and Pakistan, North and South Korea, Britain and the IRA, nor did they say that the much maligned George W. Bush was the first American president to state publicly that the Palestinians have a right to their own nation. What a curious imperialist power America is. But again and again we ask ourselves, why do they dislike us so? Why do they hate us with such passion, such intensity, such unrelenting resentment? Paul Hollander blames it on a massive subculture of alienation among the elite. A capitalist society like America engenders hostility in intellectuals because it cannot meet their need for meaning and purpose in life. Ironically, they search for utopia in the socialist world. Sartre, Pablo Picasso, sympathize with communist systems which would be the first to dispense with them and their genius. As Hollander points out, there is little evidence that intellectuals, or for that matter, non-intellectuals, living in countries considered socialist, are charmed or disarmed by the idea of socialism. Read Alexander Solzhenitsyn for The Horrors of the Gulag, Armando Valladares about Fidel's Cuban paradise, Vaclav Havel about 40 years of repression in communist Czechoslovakia, Lech Walesa about the official suppression of solidarity in communist Poland. Arthur Koestler, who worshipped and then rejected the god of communism, explained his acceptance of Marxism-Leninism this way. The necessary lie, the necessary slander, the necessary intimidation of the masses to preserve them from short-sighted errors, the necessary liquidation of oppositional groups and hostile classes, the necessary sacrifice of a whole generation in the interest of the next. It may all sound monstrous, and yet it was so easy to accept while rolling along the single track of faith. There's also the propensity of Western intellectuals to apply double standards. Chomsky cannot accept the killing fields of Cambodia, but believes that President Bush and associates are guilty of the supreme international crime. Murray McCarthy accepted that Americans were tortured in North Vietnamese prisons, but not that Cubans were tortured in the prisons on the Isle of Pines. Again, why are they so anti-American? For Europeans, writes Andre Markovitz of the University of Michigan, it's payback time for Mr. Big, for his arrogant attitude and demeanor, for his general misdeeds, like imperialism, as well as specific ones, like the bombing of Dresden, but above all, simply for his being big. We all know that the United States is a deeply religious nation, and yet, in Europe, the process of secularization continues unabated. The German depiction of America as a religiously deformed, economically utilitarian, and culturally shallow civilization reached its apogee in the writings of Martin Heidegger and his conception of America, or Americanism, as a site of cultural catastrophe. There is the psychological aspect of anti-Americanism. The authors of Dangereuse en Amérique write, America has colonized others' minds even more than their territories. And let us not forget the cultural source. The problem with the American system, to use a term made famous by Rousseau and picked up by Marx, is that it's bourgeois. Now, the political scientists Peter Kazenstein at Cornell and Robert Kahane at Princeton have identified six kinds of anti-Americanism: liberal, social, sovereign nationalist, radical, legacy, and elitist. And I think that these are only the tip of the iceberg, or should I say, the ever-active volcano of anti-Americanism. Liberal anti-Americans accuse Americans of endemic hypocrisy and our selective commitment to American values. See our rampant racism. Social anti-Americans say we always put the market before the state. See the 1/6 of Americans who live in poverty. Sovereign anti-Americans see us as a threat to the international community. See Iraq, Afghanistan, Nicaragua, Palestine. The roots of anti-Americanism, according to Joseph Jaffe, a visiting professor at Stanford, are three: American power, America as the steamroller of global modernization, and American cultural seduction. Yes, seduction. While many hate America, even more imitate America. Now, the French may occasionally burn down a McDonald's, but in fact, there are 1,000 McDonald's in France. You don't have to be a Freudian to know that we both hate the seducer and ourselves for succumbing to him. Yet, the question haunts us. Why do the anti-Americans hate us so? Well, I think it's because they're secularists and we are believers. Because they are collectivists and we are individualists. Because they are utopians and we are realists. Because they are internationalists and we are patriots. Because they are elitists and we are populists. Because they are pacifists and we are fighters. Because they are Marxists and we are entrepreneurs. Because they are progressives and we are conservatives. Because they are enamored of the French Revolution and we thank Almighty God for the founders for the American Revolution. So, let them follow the road to serfdom. We choose a different road, the road to liberty.